cover of the Philadelphia Magazine says the greatest mob story ever. Says forget the Sopranos, forget the Godfather, forget Goodfellas.
It's a mofo.
It's one I've never heard before.
I've never heard, and it rivals the Henry Hill stuff, and I think exceeds it on a couple of levels.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, and it goes through a lot of bizarre little twists and turns, and it's the story of John Veazey. The author behind this article is here in our studio. Please welcome Ralph Cipriano.
Hey.
Morning, Ralph. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing wonderful. So, when did you first hear about the story of John Veazey?
During the Stanford trial.
Get a little bit closer to the mic, please, sir. Right on it.
During the Stanford trial 15 years ago.
Yeah.
15 years ago.
That's where you first
heard about it. Yeah.
And you've been following it ever since? Or?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it took a long time to coax this guy out from the cold.
How did you go about that? Because where you find him, he's on the FBI witness relocation program, which is supposed to make you unfindable. How did you manage to do that?
Well, I have a good friend named Dave Schratweiser, and
he's great.
He's the guy who did it.
We've had him on the show a number of times. He does all the crime reporting for Fox, and he does a great job.
Dave has been working on John for 16 years to get him to tell his story, and I was a Johnny-come-lately brought in at the last moment, and I couldn't be happier.
Yeah.
What a ride.
All right, well, what is his story? If you can give us the shorter version of it, because it goes through some weird stages.
Well, he's a poor kid who falls into a mob war and becomes a hitman and kills a few people and has a brother, older brother, who's looking out for him. And the older brother basically talks him into doing the right thing and turning himself in. And the older brother pays the price for that.
He gets taken out by the guys, obviously, who don't want to be exposed. And not only that, but John himself was the victim.
That's an unbelievable story.
You really got to get close to that mic, man. Right. Stay on top of
it. It's an unbelievable story. He gets shot three times in the head. And once in the stomach, and he walks away from it. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
There's so much nuance to it. Okay, he worked under two crime bosses. He said shot three times in the head, brother killed. He is hired, he was hired to kill Joey Merlino.
Correct.
For $10,000. He basically says, yeah, I can do that. Doesn't manage to do it, but kills one of Merlino's backup guys.
Michael Cianciglini, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, pretty famous hit.
And that sets him up. But he comes from a past. His dad was an alcoholic and ends up dead. And he has his troubled past. So he does this, becomes a witness for the prosecution. And he was testifying. Who was the mob boss? John?
Stanford,
okay. So he goes, middle America, we assume, where they send people like this. He goes and changes his life and starts to excel as a car salesman. Whatever attributes he had as that made him an effective crime dude now makes him a great car salesman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that fun?
He
was a hardworking criminal and he was a hardworking car salesman. You can't outwork this guy. He's an amazing physical specimen. He has so much energy. But he's a very likable person.
He's just got that good vibe about him.
As his lawyer told me, you know, dogs like John Veazey, old ladies like John Veazey, you know, grandma, you know, he goes down the list. Everybody likes this guy. He won over, you know, two or three juries just with his charm and honesty.
So he's there. He's selling, he becomes they call him the closer because the closer. He closes all the deals.
All the deals.
And he starts to get, he becomes the manager of the dealership, starts to get additional dealerships. He's flying around in the corporate jets, all this stuff.
Right. Giving sales seminars.
A competing company gets leery of him and his background. They send a guy over posing as an FBI agent and basically expose him, correct?
Well, it's a little, not exactly.
Yeah.
Basically, what happens is he gets in an altercation in a bar. Some guy takes a swing at him. He knocks him out with one punch. The guy needs 40 stitches to put his face back together. Everybody at work starts wondering, who is this guy?
You know, right.
Nobody's seen, you know, he's just devastation.
Because they're used to him dressing up as Santa Claus and helping change tires and all that stuff.
Yeah, so they start to wonder who he really is, and they go on the internet and they find out who he is. And his cover gets blown at his dealership. He's got to go find work in another place, and that's when the other FBI, the former FBI agent, shows up.
So he uncovers,
he's
basically exposed, which is illegal. to expose someone who's on the FBI witness relocation program, right?
True. This guy's working as head of security. He thinks he's defending his corporation from an unsavory employee.
Sure.
You probably could hire him here.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. And so now where is he left? He's now cut loose. He had the successful second life. And now he's basically on the run, correct?
He is on the run. He's taken another job in another city. He doesn't want anyone to know where he is, including the government. But he calls me from time to time and leaves these little cryptic messages, like the one he left for Joey Merlino at the end of the story.
And he's, what kills me is that they sort of, they're using Facebook. Yeah. Like they use Facebook and
mobsters on Facebook.
Mobsters on Facebook and someone's started to get wind that he might be returning to Philadelphia to finish up some old debts.
Exactly.
And people were freaking out.
That's when mobster wives called the FBI and asked for protection.
Do you think John Vesey plays Mafia on Facebook?
I know he does.
He does?
Yes, he does.
Are you kidding?
Wait, really?
Yeah, and all his relatives and friends play, and I believe there's even a crime boss named after him on one of those games.
Oh, my God.
I have to ask you, with the nature of the classic, and we're familiar, obviously, with Goodfellas and the Henry Hill story, and going undercover, when that occurred and going on the relocation program, when that occurred, the internet didn't exist. And now, with the ability to find information and to sort of raise a red flag by an action here or there, how does the government successfully keep these people hidden with all the resource that anyone has through Google?
I don't think it can be done.
It can't be done.
No.
So when they promise an informant or somebody that they can do it, it's not completely accurate?
Yeah. Well, it's their best intention.
Right.
John makes it a little trickier for everybody.
Ralph, what if somebody really wants to find John, and they know that you know how to get in touch with him?
Yeah.
Does that freak you out at all?
My mother brought this up.
But I always wonder that about all reporters or, writers because a lot of people write about the mob and go and talk to these people and kind of get into their world a little bit. That has to make you nervous at some point.
Are you saved by your high-profile status?
Yeah, that really always does it for me. I think what happens here, the nice thing is that John has changed locations. So, I'm no longer current.
Okay. So
Thank you, John.
So you don't have information as to his current location.
I do not.
All right.
Well, I mean, there's a picture of him in here, and this would be indicative of other, hitmen or mobsters, and it shows, here's a picture. It says, VZ showing off his torture weapon of choice, a power drill.
Relay that sequence. And he explain that whole thing in the article. It's just gut-wrenching.
VZ is told that a rival mobster named Joe Fudge, don't you love the nickname?
Yes, Joe Fudge, because he probably likes fudge.
Yeah, Joe Fudge is out to get him. He's bragging that he's going to put away John.
Right.
So John's brother, Billy, his older brother, always his protector, calls him up and says, you got a problem with this Joe Fudge guy. John has an even bigger problem because he's under house arrest at the time, so he can't leave his home. So he asks one of his mobster buddies to bring Joe Fudge over for a visit. The mobster buddy brings Joe Fudge over. Joe is brought in, and VZ has a power drill hooked up to a 50-foot cord, and he starts slapping this guy around, and saying, hey, so you want to kill me, huh? And he starts slapping him around with the power drill, and he's got a big paddle tip on it, and he's pulling out chunks of his hair.
Oh, my
God. With the power drill.
In the middle of this whole disaster, VZ's parole officer calls him up.
He's torturing a guy at home, and he gets a call from the parole officer.
So he's got one hand on the phone, and he's got the other hand with his power drill, and he's answering the parole officer's questions with one, and he's drilling him with the other hand.
God
Almighty.
Amazing
story.
God Almighty.
Wow.
See, that's the thing that, and I guess you can't help but draw the comparison between Henry Hill and the whole thing, but Hill was not able to stay out of trouble. He was selling crystal meth out of his house.
Yeah.
And so he just always returns to the criminal background. Do you think VZ? Well, VZ apparently was establishing that he could maintain that straight and narrow when forced to.
Yeah, John is a wily character. If I was an enemy of his, I'd be worried about him falling off the wagon, shall we say, and returning to his old ways. But what John had was an older brother who was always pushing him to... you know, do the right thing.
Right.
Even though he had a checkered past himself.
The brother's checkered past, did it include murder as well?
No.
Okay.
No. But he was the ultimate tough guy of South Philadelphia from everything I've known. They call him Billy the Banger.
Billy the Banger.
For good reason.
Yeah. You know. Wow. Billy the Marzipan.
Yeah.
Ralph, there are a lot of great Hollywood adaptations of mob stories, mafia stories, and I want to know if somebody like John recognizes their power and would mimic any of his actions based on Goodfellas or The Sopranos or whatever, and in the back of their mind, do they ever think, well, my story could be Henry Hill's story, and I could make this into a movie. Do they get
theatrical about it?
Did they get wrapped up in the Hollywoodization of the mafia?
Only afterwards. John was one of these strange guys who he grew up not idolizing mobsters. Many people in South Philadelphia do. John had no respect for any of them. He had no respect for the mafia. He laughed at his making ceremony where they wanted to burn his hand, and he said, no, thank you. I mean, John was such an outsider, the only white kid growing up in the black projects. He was so poor. You know, he used to steal Joey Merlino's, well, he would say borrow, Joey Merlino's go-kart. John had no respect for any of that stuff. I think only later did he come to understand that he had a tremendous story.
I mean, and I asked you when you came in, and we were just talking off air, has anyone contacted you about optioning this story?
Not yet.
Okay. M. Night Shyamalan, man. This is good. If you're listening over there, give a call. You're starring Kathy Romano as John Vesey. And the role of a lifetime. Because it is, you look at it, there's so many nuances. The whole aspect of being out, is it common? We assume they go to Middle America. We assume they go to the Midwest somewhere.
Right.
Is that real, or is that so obvious now that they send them to major cities?
The ones that I know of and have talked to have been sent to major cities in, shall we call it, Middle America.
Okay.
And they stick out like sore thumbs. I mean, John himself told me that every other week some stranger would walk up to him and say, are you in the mafia?
I mean, that's counterproductive. Yeah.
His own, you know, girlfriend who became his wife, she said to him, what are you, a mafia hitman? You know, just by looking at him, she
just knew.
Did he reveal where he was selling cars in his second life? In what city? Because his cover is blown, he's not there anymore, right?
Right. He left.
Yeah.
But he hasn't. He doesn't want that out.
Okay.
Well, wasn't there a billboard that said, if we can't beat that deal, I'll put a power drill through your skull?
That would have been a good billboard. Yeah.
Well, this is like out of the movie History of Violence, Steve, where the guy gets a new life, goes off, he's left that behind him. And
it turns, and it catches up with him. What do you think the life expectancy of a John Vesey is, considering that he is where he is right now and on the lam and all that?
I hope John is going to reverse his family fortunes. He told me no Vesey ever died a peaceful death.
Right.
I would like to see John live to be a ripe old age and surprise us all.
You've come to like him even with his nefarious past.
John is just a very likable person.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's a dangerous person. I mean, anybody familiar with his background would have to concede that, but he just has a lot of charm. And if you're a reporter looking for a colorful character, this guy
is
can't beat him.
He was convicted of two murders. Has he ever indicated how many people he's actually killed?
I think that's it ends there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's expressed a lot of remorse about that. He has nightmares about his own shooting, and he's very upset about what happened to his brother.
Do you think he would look to follow through on a Merlino thing?
Or is that even? It all depends on how he's feeling that day.
I mean, he himself was shot in the head three times.
Isn't that
three
amazing? Times and in the stomach.
Yeah.
Once in the stomach. I told him, you know, 200 guys go up the stairs. This happens over a butcher shop. He's locked in a butcher shop. He walks with two guys named Frank Martinez, who's the underboss, and a guy named Al Pajamas, who got that nickname for putting people to sleep.
Nice.
He walks into the locked room.
They have the best nicknames.
He discovers that all the furniture is covered in plastic.
Uh-oh.
And they tell him, we're painting.
That's right out of Goodfellas.
Yep.
It's just so great. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the scene in the Melrose is the classic of
Melrose
time,
Diner.
As far as I'm concerned.
Explain that quickly.
There's a big sit down. Billy, the older brother, has his brother John in there, and he's basically telling him, "You got to flip. You got to, you know, you can't go around shooting people. You've got to turn yourself into the feds and go straight." And John goes off in a tirade, screaming, "F the mafia, yeah. F John Stanfa," and he outlines his own plan. Slaps a 357 down on the counter while all the old ladies look up for their pancakes at the Melrose.
Yeah. Right.
And all conversation ceases. And these two brothers are yelling and screaming at each other, and then the older brother starts crying, which is something John has never seen from his brother since their mother died. And,
right.
And he says to him, you know, you're going to get killed, and that's why John flips.
That's the epiphany, and wow. And the irony is it's his brother that ends up getting killed because of his actions.
Right.
Mm. Wow.
Well, yeah. That's got to be a movie. It's got
to
be a movie.
It's got to be. With that starring scene, Kathy Romano.
Dramatic scene right there. Kathy Romano as John Veazey.
Yeah.
I can portray him.
Wow. All right.
You're going to need some tattoos.
well, this article, it's a really twisty, bizarre killer story, literally.
Yeah, the article has to be optioned, and we'd like to present that to M. Night Shyamalan.
We know Night.
Our best who
we can do it for
great.
You.
Yeah.
The That's greatest fun. Mob story ever is what it's called, and it's on the cover of Philadelphia Magazine, and it's written by Ralph Cipriano. Ralph, thank
Good
you,
job.
Man. We appreciate it. Thanks for coming here this morning.